Then God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the animals that were with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subsided. The fountains of the deep and the windows of heaven were also stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained. And the waters receded continually from the earth. At the end of the 150 days, the waters decreased. Then the ark rested in the seventh month, the 17th day of the month, on the mountains of Ararat. And the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were seen. So it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made. Then he sent out a raven, which kept going to and fro until the waters had dried up from the earth. He also sent out from himself a dove to see if the waters had receded from the face of the ground. But the dove found no resting place for the sole of her foot, and she returned into the ark to him, for the waters were on the face of the whole earth. So he put out his hand and took her and drew her into the ark to himself. And he waited yet another 7 days. And again he sent the dove out from the ark. Then the dove came to him in the evening, and behold, a freshly plucked olive leaf was in her mouth. And Noah knew that the waters had receded from the earth. So he waited yet another 7 days and sent out the dove, which did not return again to him any more. And it came to pass in the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, that the waters were dried up from the earth. And Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and indeed the surface of the ground was dry. And in the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dried. Then God spoke to Noah, saying, "Go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing of all flesh that is with you, birds and cattle and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, so that they may abound on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth." So Noah went out, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him. Every animal, every creeping thing, every bird, and whatever creeps on the earth according to their families went out of the ark. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a soothing aroma. Then the Lord said in his heart, "I will never again curse the ground for man's sake, although the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth, nor will I again destroy every living thing as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease."
Any thoughts? What did you see?
I hope to be able to tell you today. There's a very interesting period of time that is being recorded. And last week, or 2 weeks ago, I was asked a question about 600 years. Well, I hope being able to answer those questions today. Very important that we kind of say and see something, because in a sense, time began to be recounted, established at a precise time. And that was at Noah's 500 years old. We'll get there in a minute. And there's a reason why, and a certain event that comes up. And all of a sudden, when we look at it and compare it with other places, we see a picture. I'm going to tell you, when we look at this, it's not just a story, although it is a story. It is a story of how God has and does run the show. I hope we'll be able to see this today. First of all, chapter 8, verse 1. Has God forgot something?
He could have.
You what?
He could have.
He could have. Okay, he could have forgot.
Or not.
Or not.
Not as we know, forget to lose out of mind, but he could have chosen not to remember.
All right. But what we must look at, though, is the Hebrew words. All right. To make a real long story short, I've said this before. Yes, it has something to do with in the mind. All right. But this Hebrew word does not mean, like it does in English, oh, I got to recall what took place. No. It's really in Hebrew, this word, that he has been marked. He marked. He didn't say, and God marked Noah. Now, that makes more sense. What did he mark him with?
A mark.
Mind.
With what?
Mind.
No, with his mind. God marked. Unlike when we can forget things, right? It's easy. But see, when God started this whole thing, basically he said, in a sense, the whole word, is that remembering, the word remembering in the Bible does not have any to do with recollection, but a focusing upon an object of memory that results in an action. So he marked, in a sense, he marked Noah in his mind to carry out the action he already had established to do. All right, it's a really complicated Hebrew phrase to try to understand, but in one way it's not that hard when you take a look at it. He would take Noah, all his family, and every creature, living thing, and begin a new life with them. Law, life was renewed. The family was renewed, and all living creatures were renewed. It wasn't that God had an afterthought and saying, well, all mankind is evil, wicked, and wipe them off face of the earth. No, he had something in his mind. He set something in order. And we already read about Noah. What was he noted for?
Righteousness.
Righteousness. What else was he noted for?
Faith.
Sorry, what?
Faith.
Faith, okay. He walked with God. Now, that's a little bit different than just believing God. In Hebrew, that walking with God does mean you are dwelling with him. You are part of him, and he, God, is part of you. All right? So keep that part in mind as we continue on with this story. But the Hebrew word is to mark. Now, we think in our word, mark is a negative terminology. No, not when God marks it. Who else did he mark?
Cain.
Why did he mark Cain?
To save him.
To save his life. Now, he marked Noah. Why? To save his life. To save his family. To save all the animals. Yes.
Revelations, the inkhorn. He marks his people.
Marking the people. Right. So we understand what we're talking about here. It wasn't that God forgot anything. He started something, and he was going to complete it. And he started, and he marked Abraham, marked Noah, and all those with him to have life. Another word I want to call into it is called a God made a wind. Now, I haven't been able to talk too much about this, but I think it's very, very important at this particular point in time. What's that word in Hebrew?
Ruach.
Ruach. What does ruach mean?
Breath.
Means nothing more than what it says. Wind. Right? All right. Now, there are different kinds of, and we know it's been translated, and it legitimately can be translated as spirit. What does the wind tell you? Why did God use the word ruach to describe something?
You can't see it.
You can't see it? What else did the Messiah say?
You don't know where it goes.
You don't know where it comes, and you don't know where it goes. You absolutely cannot know anything about it, okay? But it uses the word wind both in Greek and in Hebrew, and in English, it says the same thing, right? We always tell somebody, it says, you know, you got an evil spirit in you. What do you say? You got an evil ruach in you. You got an evil wind in you. This doesn't make sense, right? So the wind is telling us something. And so God opens up with this word. In the very beginning of Genesis chapter 1, he talks about he put a ruach over the face of the earth. A power that's of and by itself, a picture of something that is very powerful. Wind is very powerful in our country, isn't it? Our country has been devastated by horrible wind power. That is probably the one main power that God uses more than anything else is wind. Now, he may mix it with rain. He may mix it with anything he wants. But it's the wind that really brings in the horrible and destructive things. He can bring in water. He can bring anything he wants. Sand, wind. You know, the wind goes on the desert sand. You know, he's bringing in sand. But it's the wind. You understand what I'm saying so far? Now, let's go in a little bit deeper. Wind, this word, the word for is, it just means breath.
What?
Breath, breathing in and breathing out. We use that also in our English words. We may say to someone who has an evil or a good spirit, right? We may say that a person is a spirited one. Or we may also say that one is spiritual troubled, or that one's spirit is down, or one's spirit is up. And also, we also may say that it's a spiritual part or spiritual portion of the Torah. Right? We use that word always, but we don't really understand what it means. But it has to do with what word? Ruach, which means wind. All right. Now. Each one of us have had, at one time in our life, most of us anyway, a dog or a cat. Now, all of a sudden, we use this word, the dog has a personality. No, it really doesn't, because it's not a person. It's got a dogality. Or it's a catality, but it's not a person. All right? What does that mean to you? You know, there's certain animals, a certain, like a dog, it's most famous, and cats, because most people either have a cat or a dog. They have a very unique part about them that's different than any other dog or any other cat, right? And what is that called?
Characteristics.
We have, you ever heard of the word spirited horse? Horse has been spirited? Mm-hmm. What do you mean, the horse has got winded? The horse got wind? Yes, it does. That's what air going in and going out of our lungs is. It's called ruach. Mm-hmm. All right? Yes.
Which is sometimes we even say, what a nice little spirit he's got.
Yes, right. That's right. Now, what I want to get at is this point, okay? There are multiple winds. There are multiple ruach. Right? There's not just one, but a multiple one. Now, let's put back. We also know Scripture calls it man has a ruach. Right?
Yep.
Man has a spirit. And we also know that an angel is a ruach. Right? We know that. Now, next comes is, we have to begin to identify. There is a dog, and it has a spirit of a dog. A man has a spirit of a man. A woman has a spirit of a woman. They identify the person, right? Now, is the spirit of a dog like the spirit of a man?
No.
No. Okay. So now we're coming into ruach. And we use the word holy ruach, or ruach kodesh. Now, all of a sudden, that's a different kind, isn't it? That's a spirit that is not like man. It's not a spirit that's it's not like the angels. It's a spirit of what? What is God? Holy. So when we start using this word, and he comes forth, and he says, okay, I'm going to bring forth a ruach on the face of the earth, don't put that in connection as referring to the Spirit of God. It's just the wind. He's going to use it for his purpose. Now, when he breathed the nostril into man, what did he breathe in? Ruach! That's why man has a ruach. It's not the spirit of God. It's a spirit that God put and placed within man. Now, we have to have a spirit of God in us, right?
Yep.
That is different, isn't it?
Yep.
All right. So we get this back in our mind. We kind of picture stuff because we have to know that the power of wind is the one main identification that tells us how we can tell one person from another. Yes.
Wind blows and it makes the trees speak.
Yes. The reason why I'm meaning to say this is because I want us to keep in mind that every time we use the word Ruach HaKodesh, we must know who we are talking about. If you have Ruach HaKodesh in you, that doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the Holy One. Right? So we have to not take it for granted. All right, that's my message for right now. But I think it's very, very important because he said, do not take me for granted. Yes.
Is it the same concept of Samson?
Of some, a what?
Samson, is when it said the Spirit of the Lord was upon him.
Yes. Well, it's only temporary in that point. That's not permanent. Now, we can be removed from it, but it's our choice. Okay. With that being said, I want to check the verse 2. Very fascinating. Did you notice this before?
Yes.
What does it say?
Fountains of the deep.
There's three things listed. Did you ever notice that before?
Yeah, the windows of the sky were stopped and the rain from the sky was restrained. So the windows of the sky and the rain were two different things.
This is beautiful. I want you to learn a word here. It's called windows of heaven. It's not the rain from heaven. It's the windows of heaven. Now, that's different. Do not put in your mind that. That's not what the Greek word is. Not what the Hebrew word is, rather. Now, there is another word in this which would refer to that. But right now, we'll go look at this one, the windows of heaven. What do you think it means? Some of you have got some good translations. Would you take a look at it? If you've got different translations, this is a very key word. Okay, I can't have much time. We will go on then. It comes from a word meaning, a verb meaning to lurking, to move about unnoticed. The windows of heaven moved about unnoticed. It was doing something that you wouldn't notice it doing it because it's hiding itself. You can't see it. Now, with this particular word is very fascinating. Let's go to the 7th chapter, verse 11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, the second month, in the 17th day of the month, the same day in which the fountains of the great were broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. Don't think about it in the rain. Think about what opened up. Okay. What do you think opened up?
Sunlight?
No,
go ahead.
Something much greater and more forceful than rain that would cause it to flood over the top of the earth.
Okay. What? The Hebrew phrase here has to do with what we would call a lattice. What's a lattice? Got a bunch of grids in it, right? Okay? Still doesn't make sense to us yet, right? But what happens when you open up a canal gate? What's behind the canal?
Water.
Unseen. Lurking. Waiting to be unleashed. And when it says here, and this is not talking about windows that we see through, it's like a barrier now is opened up and down comes the water. Not just the rain, but the water that's in the heaven that God has set and put in motion. I see, he's no longer do that anymore, right? He's not going to do that anymore. It's like a floodgate. Best way to describe this word for windows. A floodgate. The floodgates of heaven opened. The floodgates opened. Now, we have some other areas in the Bible that talks about the very same word. I don't know. Some of you will know it really hard. We'll go to Malachi. Chapter 3, verse 10. What is it? Okay. No, listen. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in my house, and prove me now here with, says the Lord of hosts, for I will not open, for I will not open you the floodgates of heaven. And the goal says windows. Now, this window is not about rain, is it? That's a great blessing can come down. Can you imagine being flooded with the blessings? Well, we won't go to Kings. There was a story in Kings which one man made a mockery of God, and Elijah said, the floodgates of heaven will not be open to you, but will be open to the king. And when the floodgates opened, the man was killed who mocked God. He didn't get it, but the king got it. So we think about all these big things and lie in wait and wait. God is saying, my window is lying in wait. It's working, waiting to open up. I'm opening up this lattice. Now picture lattice is tight. All of a sudden opens up. Down comes tremendous amount of blessings. Oh, in this case, with Noah, water. Tremendous amount. We won't go through all that today. But I want to jump real quick here, because I'm running out of time. Verse 7. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Because, see, I asked this boy a question. I had to find an answer. Okay. What does it say? And he sent forth a raven, which went up to and fro until the water were dried up from the earth. Why a raven? Oh, did he finally get smart and say, wrong bird, gotta send the dove out? Why did he send the raven out?
Because ravens can survive on carrion and other things.
What did the raven do? What did the raven do?
To and fro.
He went to and fro, which is expression in English, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth from where? And he didn't do anything. All he could do is back and forth, had no place to go. And what happened? He had to come back to the ark. He'd come to and fro, or in and out, back and forth, and no place for him to go. Now, why a raven? Why would Noah send out a raven for? What did he want the raven to tell him? What did he want the raven to reveal to him?
I don't know, but he would have revealed that there were nothing dead to eat.
Okay.
It would have all been decomposed. The water hadn't dried up enough for even the ravens to survive. If the raven kept coming.
What does the word in Hebrew, raven, what does it mean?
I don't know.
Well, this helps us to understand why it's called a raven.
Messenger.
A what?
A messenger.
Very interesting terminology. Comes from a verb. And it means what? Comes from the verb. I'll tell you what it means since we haven't got enough time. It's come from the word, maybe the Hebrew is rovav, for raven. Hebrew word is rovav. But the Hebrew word for it, verb is arav. And it means basically going dusky. Getting unclear. It's like the sun is setting, but it's not completely clear. I can't see anything. Now, in Genesis, the sixth chapter, God said something about a window. That's very fascinating. God said something about a window. What do you think he said about a window?
There.
If I got my notes here.
A window shall thou make in the ark. Verse 16. A window shalt thou make in the ark.
Now, don't think of this. And don't think of the floodgates. Because that word does not exist there at that point when God said, make a window. You know what it means? Make a noon. You know, midday.
Make a noon.
How do you make a midday? How do you make a window? And make it a cubic, square. 16 inches, 18 inches, and 18 inches. Now, why noon? Why not morning? Why not sun? Why not? What did noon tell you?
Sun straight up.
Now, all that means in Hebrew is for light to come in. If you were on the ark, God would want Noah to know something. How would he know when 7 days come and go? Able to see night and day, and not if it's on the south side or west side or north side or the east side. Guess what? He wouldn't be able to tell when the sun rose or when the sun set. But when he's there, guess what? You got overhead light, and however that shadow cast, you can tell what's going on. Now, that was the window which he opened up, and he let the raven out. And the raven went to and fro. It was not clear. It was unclear. So let the dove out. What happened to the dove? Why?
There was no place for it to land.
Very fascinating here in Hebrew. What verse are we on?
We're on 8, 9.
Oh, yeah. Verse 8. He also said forth Gulf to see if the waters were abated from the face of the ground. Now, remember, he sent forth the raven to do what? To see if the water had faded? No. Do you see how? We'll get to that word. I'll show you in Hebrew why the raven is used. We won't go there right now. But think of the dove now. Why a dove? Listen very carefully. The dove found no rest for the sole of her foot. What does that phrase mean?
Rest and peace.
Well, a raven will fly and cruise and kind of glide back.
She found. She found no. Manoah. Found no Manoah. What's Noah? Who's Noah? What does Noah mean? That's a man's name, right?
Yeah.
Means rest.
No rest.
She found no rest. And that word is used quite often in Hebrew, by the way. No rest. For what? Her feet. Not for her wings, her foot. What does foot mean? What's it aiming at? What do pigeons do? What does doves do?
They land on a branch.
Say what?
They perch on a branch.
They need a support.
They're always in a cubbyhole. They don't nest out in the open. There's always a little cubbyhole. They go into a little cubbyhole. How many times have you seen a building or something with a lot of pigeons all the place, but where's their home? It's in the cubbyholes. Found a cave for them. No place for her to have a home. No place for her to have a home. Okay? So it's very interesting here that she found no place, no spot, and the word Noach, Manoach means quiet, a settling place, a home, or a place to rest. She found none. What did Noah do?
Waited. Kept her for another week.
He did something else. He did that. Yeah, what did he do? He put forth his hand and covered. He sheltered. He took care of and gave the dove a home. His arms. And his name means rest. All right? Now, why an olive leaf? Remember, it's only one leaf. One of the pictures you see is like a whole branch. Hebrew, no, just one leaf. A very small one. Very tender one. Why an olive? Why an olive leaf? What does it tell you?
So life was returning to the earth.
Okay.
Things were growing.
Why not a maple leaf? Why not an apple leaf? Why not a strawberry leaf?
The oil
does something. What does the oil do? Bring forth. No. Brings forth the fuel to bring forth the light. All right? But we need to find out where this olive really is connected with. Yes, it's the olive leaf. She didn't bring forth the olive. Just the leaf. Before there was any olives. All right? You understand what I'm saying so far? Now, we've got a key into this thing about very important. This word is associated with another interesting word. It's found in Kings. 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 1. And it came to pass on the 480th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth month in Solomon's reign over Israel, that the month of Ziv, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord. What does that word Eve mean? It stands for the month that brings forth the flowers. Now, we are very keen of the first month, aren't we? We're very aware of what the third month is, right? We're very much aware of the fifth month. We're very much aware of the ninth month. We're very much aware of the seventh month. We're very much... But why the second month? Have you noticed that? Now, why the second month? Genesis chapter 7, verse 11. I want to see a pattern here. Very fascinated with the second month. Chapter 7, verse 11. And the 600th year of Noah's life on the second month, seventh day of the month, the same day where all the fountains of the deep broke up and the windows of heaven were opened. Okay, second month. Now, we have this opening up. We think of, the first month, You know, the first, the holy day, begins Passover. No, this does not begin with Passover. This begins on the second month. Why? What does God want us to know about the second month? Now, let's go to another place. Exodus chapter 16, verse 1. Exodus chapter 16, verse 1. And they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. Why is it so important that we need to know it's the second month? Does it matter?
Yeah,
it's when they... Has to, when God put it there, it's got to mean something, right? So very in the very beginning, on the seventh chapter of Genesis, we have this phrase, second month. So God is letting us know something. Now let's watch what goes on here now. Numbers chapter 1, verse 1. Numbers 1, chapter 1. What happened? And the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai and in the tabernacle congregation on the first day of the second month. What happened on the first day of the second month? They started doing what? Numbering. Oh, that's fascinating. So now we have an event that took place in the first, on the second month during Noah's time. Event that took place during King Solomon's time, an event that took place here in Numbers of the numbering. An event took place of them departing out of Egypt in the second month. Very important. When did they leave Mount Sinai? They left Mount Sinai on the second month. Not the first month, but the second month of the second year. Now, let's go one more pattern. Now, we also know that Numbers 9, verse 11 has to do with the second Passover. What month does God say it must be done on?
Second month.
The second month. Now, these are words of God. These are orders and commandments of God. And these are written down for us to pay attention to the second month. Let's continue on now. Numbers chapter 10, verse 11. And it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month that the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle of the testimony. Did you notice that before? And the second month, guess what left? The cloud. Where was the cloud going? What was the cloud supposed to do?
Lead them.
So we know now the second month has to do with an event of something that's going to take somebody or something new and a beginning all over again. So second month is very quick. During the time of Noah? Second month. We also find out during time of Noah, second month occurred when rain subsided, or the water subsided. Fascinating. Why second month? It has to tell us something. Okay. Verse 14. No. Let's go to Ezra. Ezra chapter 3, verse 8. Here comes the second month again. See what happens? We have to pay attention to what's happened in the second month. Why is it so important?
What chapter was that?
Ezra. Ezra chapter 3, verse 8. Now in the second year after coming to the house of God at Jerusalem, in the second month began Zerubbabel to reign. Who is Zerubbabel?
Rebuilt the temple.
Gives you a little message, doesn't it? Isn't it fascinating? Something begins in the second month. We are sometimes so geared in on the first month, and we're so geared in on the third month, and we're so geared in on the ninth month for Hanukkah, and so geared on the seventh month for Feast of Tabernacles, we are not paying attention to what's going on in the second month. There's a beginning. Something has happened. What happened in Noah's life? The flood began. When it was all over with, second month cleared. You know what I said? Do you pay attention to that? So we have 600 years, and it was in the second 650 years, second year, 601 of Noah's life, the water subsided, he was able to come out. Okay? Let's drop down to verse 14 of Genesis chapter 6. Genesis chapter 6, chapter, and we're on here, Genesis chapter 8, verse 14. What happened on the first month? Nothing. What happened on the second month? The land was dry. Did you notice that? Repetition of the second month is very important. What do you think it's telling us?
Watch the second month.
I'm being serious.
God starts new things.
Says a lot of things, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it sounds like, he starts new things or starts new...
Something ends and something begins. Something ends and something begins. Something ends and something begins. Right? Sometimes we pay attention. Sometimes we think, oh, the first of the year, the first month is what it begins. No. That's just a picture of something that's going to begin in the second month. Something that ends in the second month. Why God does not want a second Passover on the third month comes to an end. Yes?
I just counted it up. 27, the 27th day of the second month is 40 days from Passover, which is when Yeshua ascended into heaven to begin his reign.
On the 40th day. You see, the second month? Isn't that fantastic? You know a little more about how these numbers come together? God willing, I hope to be able to explain to you the reason why in the book of Kings lists a certain number of years, which when you look at it historically, is much, much, much longer. Only day they'll get to there. Because they were under the judges for how many years? 400 years. Then along comes King Solomon, then along comes King David, then along comes... But they said 400 and some precise years from the time Mount Sinai. What? Wait a minute. That period of time is like 900 years, physically counted, but it says it wasn't. And this is where people have a contradiction. They see the Bible not telling the truth because it was longer. We've got to find out how God counts. I'm about ready to call it quits. Before I do, verse 21. I like this one. And the Lord, or Yahweh, smelt the sweet savor, and Yahweh said something. Who did he speak to? A man. What did he talk to himself? He sure enough did, didn't he?
He marked something in his heart.
Hey, no, it's not marked. He actually said something. The Hebrew says that he spoke to his heart.
His heart.
He talked to his heart. Do you talk to your heart?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's just okay. If God could talk to himself, you could talk to yourself, right? Now, I don't know how Noah knew this unless afterwards God told him in precise detail, this is what I said to myself. Because Noah would not have heard that. At this point, we're not in the ninth chapter yet. So it's very fascinating. Now, what does heart mean? No, it really means exactly what you think it means. Feelings, emotions, heartfelt things that you yourself associate that makes your blood run. Well, in a sense, it does make your blood run in the physical sense, but it does motivate you. You remember God says, I cannot. You're breaking my heart. In the very beginning, I repent in my heart that I created man. It's emotional, strong emotion, very powerful emotion. You know, so God does have emotions. Yes, men. Some men don't know that, but God does have emotions. he's not a macho guy. And then we know what it says, you know. I wanted to get one more place here. I missed it, and I got to get back to it. Sorry, Jeff, if I'm interrupting you. You have a lot to say today. I know. But I got to find...
a statement about the raven for a moment. Got so many notes here. Where is it at? It's in I'm not going to find it. I'm not going to find it today. Anyway.
The nutshell.
And the greatest thing that God says is what? Deuteronomy 6, chapter, verse 5. We all know that. You will do what? You will love the Lord your God with
all your heart.
Right. With all your heart, with all your soul, all your breath, your air, your spirit, out, in and out, you know, it will do that. And, of course, your might or the things you do. All right? So, you know, God really is after something. Nobody said, if they were just a heart in them. That's what God's after, right? What is the new covenant it's all about?
Writing in our mind
and in our hearts. It cannot be separated. It becomes as echad.